You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. Hola, mi amigos. Me llamo Jose. All right, that's the only high school Spanish I remember. I'm Smoking Joe, and...
I'm Brad Jackson.
And this is our Cinco de Mayo episode.
Hell yeah. Break out the festivities.
And so, since it is our Cinco de Mayo episode, we tried to get a cigar that went with the theme, so... Time to light them up. What are we smoking today, Brad?
We've got the Rocky Patel Prohibition Mexican on tap today. And I got to say, man, this is an awesome surprise. I thought the cigar was actually going to be a lot lighter in flavor than it is, but it's actually got a little spice and a little kick behind it.
Yeah, it's still a Maduro wrapper. So it's still got a little bit of, it's not like super full-bodied, but it's still got, you know, at least a medium to full-bodied kick.
Yep, so this is going to be a 6.5 by 52 Toro size. It's got a San Andreas Mexican wrapper with Nicaraguan filler and binder. And like Joe already touched on, you know, you're looking at I would say a medium full on this one.
Yeah, the Prohibition's nice because it's kind of a throwback to, you know, the old, like, you know, alcohol Prohibition days, because Rocky Patel does a lot of stuff fighting for cigar smokers' rights and stuff. So this was kind of his, like, cigar to say, hey, you know, screw you guys. You know, Prohibition for cigars isn't going to work about as well as Prohibition for alcohol did. So the boxes these come in are actually like mason jars, kind of like, you know, looks like old
I was going to, you know, touch on that. What do you think about jars? the mason jar aspect of it? Because you don't see too many cigars coming in a clear glass.
Yeah, it's I've seen some, like, old stuff that was, like, cured in alcohol for display that way, but yeah, I've not seen a mason jar full of cigars. So it's a cool new concept, and it comes in two different kinds. This, like I said, we're smoking the San Andreas, also known as the Mexican. They also have a broadleaf Maduro, Connecticut broadleaf wrapper that I've had several times, and it's also a damn good smoke.
Yeah, I've had the broadleaf once or twice. This is my first time having the San Andreas wrapper, and I gotta say, man, I'm really digging it so far. Like I said, I'm definitely picking up on the spicy notes, but, you know, we've just lit up probably 5-6 minutes ago, so we're well, you know, still into the first third of the cigar. So, you know, we'll let you folks know what's going on once we get down to the, you know, second and the final third.
And they say it's got like a more of a sweet, earthy, with notes of spice, cedar, chocolate, roasted nuts, and a long, toasty finish. Or at least that's what their website says. But so far, I'm not arguing with them. It's definitely not, yeah, like... I think the broadleaf's a little bit stronger, but it's definitely, you know, it's not very weak. I mean, it's definitely, I'd say, a good little bit more than a medium smoke to me.
Yep, and the other thing is, just real quick, I like the construction of this because it actually kind of has a old school look and feel to it a little bit, so it doesn't look quite as modernized as some of the stuff we've been smoking, at least. So, you know, that was just another aspect that kind of caught my attention.
Yeah, it's a little rough, a little simple, you know, kind of throwback to that, you know, the Prohibition era where, you know, you weren't getting fancy bottles of stuff, you were getting, you know, whatever hooch was in, you know, Old Man Johnson's mason jars.
Old Man Johnson, may God rest his soul. He was a good one.
And with that, I think we'll be right back with the main topic, so stay tuned.
Lo mejor, a mujeres no me falta ni el dinero ni el amor. jineteando en mi caballo por la sierra yo me voy. Las estrellas y la luna ellas me dicen dónde voy. Ay, 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 mi amor. Ay, mi morena de mi corazón.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. This is our Cinco de Mayo episode, which translates into sink full of mayonnaise, or I think that's what it means. I don't know. I failed high school Spanish.
The fifth day of May, my friend.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes more sense.
Yes. Nothing to do with mayonnaise here, which I think it's quite funny because in our research for this episode, we both uncovered that Cinco de Mayo is nothing like most Americans think it is. Cinco de Mayo is not the Mexican version of Independence Day.
Yeah, because I'm pretty much, you know, that's what I've always thought it was, and you know, most, you know, at least non-Hispanic Americans, that's pretty much what we assume. Like, oh yeah, we party hardy on the 4th of July. You know, they got a holiday called, you know, 5th of May, it must be their Independence Day. But no, it has nothing to do with Independence Day.
And just to clarify, Independence Day in Mexico is actually celebrated on September 16th. So if we don't have an excuse to party on that day, then let's go ahead and book it on our calendars. Because that is one beautiful thing about American culture is it doesn't take much for us to find an excuse to have a good party.
And as, you know, we will get into kind of this is our celebration of you know, Mexican culture, is at least as much as two, you know, southern white men can do. But Cinco de Mayo is the anniversary of the Battle of Puebla, which occurred in the 1840s when France invaded Mexico.
Yep, and this was one of their celebrated victories. You know, that day, May 5th, 1862.
Yeah, apparently this was like, you know, the, at this time, you know, it wasn't like the French army that we know it, you know, now. But, yeah, this was when France was probably one of the, you know, a world power at the time. And the small Mexican army was completely, you know, outmanned, outgunned.
I think they're still a world power. I just think that they're just not as apt and quick to jump into
The Germans would argue against France.
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of people would argue. I mean, you know, we've all seen the memes and stuff like that of, you know, a modern version of the French Revolution and stuff. But, you know, let's not create too much controversy. I mean, we do have listeners all over the world. And with that, dead silence.
You paused for me to respond while I'm like mid-drink. Ellie, you got to at least keep running your mouth until I put down my my beer. Yeah. And this is like, it's a national holiday in Mexico, but it's not really. I mean, it's kind of like we like President's Day here. There's not really a big celebration. It's just like, oh, we get a day off from school. And I think even the only day that place it really celebrates is in the, you know, the state of Puebla. So it's
yeah, and
the actual holiday of Cinco de Mayo is almost more of an American holiday than it is a Mexican holiday.
We're always looking for a good excuse to party. But one of the interesting facts that I did was, you know, the French army was 6,000 strong and attacked the much smaller and poorly equipped Mexican army of 2,000. And so, I mean, could we almost do a Spanish version of the 300 film? I mean, would that be a thing? I mean,
we are the 2000. Just doesn't sound as cool. I mean, this was actually, for any history nerds out there, this was actually a kind of an important event, not only in their history, but also the U.S. history, because one of the things that, because this was during, you know, the Napoleonic era, and we were like in the midst of a civil war. And at that point, there was a big fear that once France took over Mexico, that they would assist the Confederacy and, you know, come in on the side of the Confederacy in the Civil War. And, you know, if that had happened, you know, they could have been a whole, you know.
Yeah, who would have known?
A much different outcome.
Yeah, that could have had a, you know, huge impact.
But since the, you know, Mexicans won this first, you know, big battle, then it kind of, yeah, screwed up those plans. And yeah, by the time, you know, we were done with the Civil War, yeah, there was, they didn't really wasn't that big of a threat to us. And at that point, we kind of assisted. Once we were done with our own shit, we were like, all right, cool. Let's like send the Mexicans some supplies and stuff, and you know, help them finish getting their independence or whatnot.
Yep. Also talking about, I don't know, I was just reading about after the battle, and, it said a year later with 30,000 troops, the French were able to defeat the Mexican army, capture Mexico City, and install Emperor Maximilian. And I remember reading, some of his stuff.
Yeah, if anybody's, watched, the old Zorro movies, TV shows, whatnot, this was that time frame. You always see kind of Zorro being the guerrilla warfighter, and this was the cause because it was a puppet government run by the French who was brutal and whatnot and oppressive to the Mexican people. So yeah, all those Zorro stories and all that kind of fall in this time frame.
Yeah, Time Magazine actually remarked related to this battle that the Puebla victory came to symbolize unity and pride for what seemed to be like a Mexican David defeating a French Goliath and helped establish a much needed sense of national unity and patriotism. So, all pretty cool things, so with that, we now know the true meaning of Cinco de Mayo.
This is only kind of slightly related, but have you seen the previews for this miniseries the History Channel's doing on the Texas-Mexican, Spanish-Texas, whatever it's called, war, with the Alamo and all that?
Yes.
I think it's called Texas Rises is what it's being called.
Yes, I have seen some of the previews for that, and it looks awesome.
A lot of big name stars for a History Channel miniseries.
Well, a lot of these miniseries that the History Channel's put together, I don't know. Back in school, history was kind of hard for me to get behind. I guess maybe it was just the way that the teachers portrayed it, or I just didn't have an understanding of, hey, jerk face, those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it again. Oops, look, there we go.
Sometimes literally for us that it may have had to retake that class once. But yeah, History Channel used to be kind of just boring documentaries, but now, the documentaries are more creative, I would say, or at least more entertaining, and I find myself watching the History Channel.
Well, I think instead of text,
or even not doing a documentary, but actually turning it into a movie. It definitely makes learning a lot easier for some people.
Well,
when you make it entertaining.
It's often said, right? You can read 5,000 words, or you can look at one picture. And, most people are visual learners. So you put that visual element behind it instead of just black and white text, and, all of a sudden it's a game changer. So, yeah, that's all I got on that one.
Plus I like shootouts, and it's all good.
Dude, and some of the firearms and everything else that were being used at the time are just absolutely amazing when you go back and look at the intricacy or... Beer's kicking in. all the phenomenal artwork, the scrolling, the etching, everything else that was done on firearms that, still to this day you look back and say, holy crap, that is, a truly a work of art.
And yeah, the Bowie knife got famous. Jim Bowie at the Alamo.
Yes. See, I guess now... that's another reason I can appreciate and get more behind history and things. Whereas in my younger years, I would just be like, all right, this is boring as hell. When is this class going to be over?
This is what happens when I do almost no research. We get real random.
No, dude, I don't think we got random at all. I think we got factual. We've educated people. Look, we educated people before we got into the science segment. Okay. I think mission more than accomplished.
All right, well, then let's talk about some of our favorite Hispanic movies, TV shows, and whatnot. We kind of already touched on it, but Zorro. That's something that's been around for a long time. He's kind of almost the Spanish Batman, really, if you get into it.
Yeah, I can see that, with his fighting styles and everything that Zorro's got going for himself.
Well, in some of the renditions of Batman, that's the movie that him and his parents were going to see when they got killed. Was I think it might have been in the original whatever the 80s Batman movies, or it might have been the cartoon I'm thinking of. But in one of them, they go to see Zorro, and that's when he gets his parents get killed after leaving a showing of Zorro. So, I'm talking about it's all related.
I have never put that together. Which then again, I am not as big into the whole DC.
I mean,
stuff,
he dresses all in black, wears a mask. I mean, it's.
I mean, but dude, the same could be said for V for Vendetta. But you know, I mean, that's a whole different take.
But he's not Mexican, so we can't talk about that in this episode. When we do the French episode, we'll talk about.
We were talking about the French previously.
True, true.
It wasn't completely off the cuff.
I mean, the Antonio Banderas versions of Zorro was pretty damn good.
Yeah,
at least the first one. The second one was, but the first one was pretty good.
Well, I mean, you know, unfortunately, the second one, I realize they, you know, unfortunately, I think we see it too much where the first movie sets the stage. It's absolutely badass, and it makes a crap load of money. And unfortunately, a lot of times, I think greed outweighs necessity, and they try to redo something that. Sometimes things should just be left alone.
Yeah, and that was one thing, too, because it kind of, you know, it was the next-gen Zorro. Because, I mean, Anthony Hopkins played the original Zorro, and he was kind of teaching this kid to take it because he had gotten old and stuff. And it was, you know, teaching this kid to become Zorro, who was, you know, Antonio Banderas.
Yep, and just, you know, real quick, so... You know, basically what we're going to try to do with this segment is, you know, some of the more influential actors, directors, producers. We've got Antonio Banderas, once actor, director, producer, been all over the place. So I think we're going to open the show with, you know, some of his works.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I remember seeing him in is Desperado.
Uh-huh.
That's probably the thing that made him famous.
Yeah, and, you know, we've did, you know, so many of these movies and stuff like that we're going to reference, we've already talked about on previous episodes. So it's kind of cool, you know, just to think back that, hey, 7-8 episodes, and here we are again. Have we failed to learn from our history? Or was our history just that awesome that it needs to be rebrought up again and can never die?
That's because I forget to write down what we talk about half the time, and, yeah, we bring the stuff back around. Yeah, and Antonio Banderas, and I mean, that was the whole, like, him, the guitar case full of guns, that was, like, really the first thing I remember seeing him in, and from there, he's been all over stuff. You know, he was in Zorro, he was in, how was it,
I mean, he was in Assassins.
Yeah, Assassins, that's another, him and Stallone.
Yes. I didn't realize Interview with the Vampire he was in.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. He was like the head of like the European vampire syndicate or whatever.
Yes. So it was kind of cool, you know, going back and like, holy crap, I missed all this stuff when I originally watched those movies. I need to pay more attention to stuff.
And then he kind of like, as some of these like badass action heroes are, you know, he kind of became a family guy too. I mean, he was in Spy Kids.
Yeah, he did Spy Kids. I mean, he did voice work in Puss in Boots and in the Shrek sequels as well. So
yeah, I completely forgot about Puss in Boots, but yeah, you see that, like, I mean, like Ice Cube. But yeah, he started off gangster as hell, and now he does family films.
Yeah, well, I mean, at some point, I think you've got to, you know, either. Once you realize one niche is kind of played out, I mean, you have to kind of move. You have to be willing to evolve. Otherwise, you're going to become a thing of the past.
Yeah, and he's always, you know, like I said, you got to try something new to show your range. But I like him. He's not kind of like completely gone the family-friendly route. He still goes back and does like the action movie, you know, hero guy. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, wasn't that the end of the Desperado trilogy.
Yes, you know, and he actually worked with Johnny Depp, Salma Hayek, and
that was a weird movie too, because it was kind of like disconjointed. I mean, it was kind of out of order and a lot of flashback stuff in it. It was very strange, but I mean, it was still, the action was still badass, whether the story made any sense or not.
Yeah, we were talking about Desperado earlier, and I actually went back and watched The Mariachi.
Yeah.
Which I thought was absolutely badass, because that's where I think a lot of the, you know, precursor to Desperado and stuff took place.
Well, that's pretty much like the prequel to Desperado, because if we'll move from Antonio into one of my favorite directors, Robert Rodriguez. And that movie there was an independent film that he had done. And that was like pretty much, if it wasn't one of his first films, it was definitely like the first thing I saw. And it was, I mean, didn't have Antonio Banderas. Like I said, this was the straight up independent film that eventually Quentin got involved in. And then they made Desperado off of the origin story that was in El Mariachi.
Yes. Oh, man. That was so awesome, too. I'm just like going back watching flashbacks of the movie in my head. Apologize. One day we're going to get the technology. We're going to do a visual podcast. Somebody else's faces.
Yeah,
and voices.
El Mariachi, it's basically, if you've seen Desperado, it's the story of how he became the vigilante. Like, he literally started off as a mariachi player. There's like some rumor going around about some kind of assassin that's coming to town that has a guitar case full of guns, and he just happens to show up, you know, to try to find work as a mariachi, and they mistake him for the assassin and, like, you know, kick his ass. He ends up getting, like, shot in the hand, I think, or whatever. And they end up killing his girlfriend or whatever. And I think the actual assassin guy end up getting killed, or they got their guitar cases switched somehow or something. So he ends up, like, you know, picking up the guns and going on a vengeance spree because these dudes just, like, completely
talk about a bad
over his
case
life.
Of, you know, misidentity. So I don't know. I mean, it just kind of goes to show you that life has a way of throwing you, you know, different scenarios that, maybe you weren't prepared for this, but that's what separates the boys from the men.
Yeah, and he's, like I said, since then, I mean, he's made tons of, like, big Hollywood movies. I mean, he, of course, you know, he directed,
Well, he did the
he did part of, he did there was Planet Terror for, in the Grindhouse series.
Yes.
He did some of Sin City.
Yep, and also had some work in Machete, The Spy Kids, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, the Dusk Till Dawn, like, TV series.
And even, you know, talking more about some of the friendly stuff, you know, The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl. And, you know, once again, Spy Kids.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing with him is he definitely has this range. I mean, he'll do these weird horror movies or these over-the-top action movies, and then kids movies.
Which, you know, I think it's kind of a coming to your own. I mean, I think that's what makes, as we talk about all of these actors and everything, I think that's what's going to bring them all full circle, is they didn't just have one role or one unique genre. They were all over the spectrum. And I think that's what truly, you know, makes them who they are today, and, you know, really has me have a profound appreciation for the works that they can do, because me personally, I could never pull off all those multiple roles.
And that's one thing about Rodriguez, is he still continue, you know, he'll do these big budget Hollywood movies, but he still kind of maintains his indie filmmaker cred. I mean, he's like, for instance, the Grindhouse, and then the Machete series. I mean, those are pretty much, you know, he has his own studio. I think it's El Rey Studios that, you know, it's,
yeah, I mean, he
even
had
done
his own TV network.
Yeah. But yeah, pretty much everything is done in-house. So it's not, you know, he doesn't have to, you know, deal with the big studios. If he wants to make something, he's like, I've got my own studio, my own special effects guys, my own writers, you know. If I want to make it, I'll make it, you know, regardless of whether or not I want to make a deal with the one of the big studios or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about El Mariachi. Dude, that film was shot for around $7,000 with money raised from, you know, friends and stuff like that. So, dude, you take $7,000 and can turn it into a success, I'm all about it, you know.
And he also directed Predators. I mean, that's a whole other genre, too. I mean, that's like sci-fi shit. I mean, he's done comics, you know, action, all this other stuff. And Predators, it was kind of weird, but it was, I mean, it was, it, I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, no, I thought it was awesome. I mean, dude, one of the big highlights for us buying Mortal Kombat was, you know, to actually be able to play as a Predator, so.
Yeah, I can't wait to try that out.
Yeah, hopefully within the next day or two, the character will be released and we can actually get some playtime. So,
of Rodriguez's work, what would be your favorite?
I would probably say From Dusk Till Dawn. You know, I like the era that they were set. I like the storyline, the action. I mean, just so much of those movies, I mean, they set the stage for, I think, pretty much everything afterwards. I mean, you know, Sin City is another one that's really up there on top of my list. Yeah.
And, I mean, Dusk Till Dawn, I mean, had to be shot pretty much the same time as Desperado, because you see the same characters, almost the same setting. It's like, hey, guys, we're already in Mexico filming this movie. Let's go ahead and film a whole other movie while we're here. Because it's like almost like, you know, exactly the same characters you see in both of those films. And, he, you know, if Quentin Tarantino is doing something, you know, Rodriguez pretty much has to show up at some point or another and help direct, write, or whatever. Those two tend to team up a lot of times.
And I think they make a very awesome duo. You know, like I said, you know, with the films like Machete and stuff like that, like I thought it was so awesome because, you know, we got the, you know, basically teaser trailer for Machete during the...
Yeah, it was never intended to be an actual movie. But it was one of the fake trailers during the Grindhouse double feature that everyone got. It got such a huge response. They're like, "Well, shit, we've got to make this into a real movie."
Yeah, and we'll talk about, you know, the actor later and stuff like that. But dude, I mean, that line, "You fucked with the wrong Mexican." Like, I can remember the theater erupting, you know, with applause and laughter. So.
Yeah, and that's another example I said of him, like, doing, like, if I want to make a movie, I'll make it. I've got my own studios and stuff. Because it was, you know, a big-budget independent film, pretty much. I mean, you know, he kind of did all of that with very little input other than his, you know, his own. And now it's went from a joke to being two movies, and I think it's intended to be a trilogy. We've seen that there's, I don't know when the third one's going to come out, but they definitely ended the second one with, Yeah,
there's definitely a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And
Charlie Sheen for president.
Yes. So, Joe, right back at you. What would be one of your favorite movies?
I think the original El Mariachi or the Machete eventual trilogy has been some of my favorite. Because I like dumb action movies. I mean,
well, I mean, that was the thing is, you know, you saw Machete and, yeah, I mean, it had every potential to be, you know, some B movie that never saw the light of day, you know, sitting in the back store of, you know, some video rental place or, you know, maybe 2 years or two decades from now, it makes it onto Netflix or something. But
it almost had that very 70s look to it. I mean, it looks like, you know, one of these old 70s like action movies that you would see on, like you said, a shelf at, you know, your video store back when we had video stores or on a deep Netflix cut. But I mean, it's almost the Expendables of comedy action movies. There's just so many like old star. I mean, we get Don Johnson, Charlie Sheen, friggin' Mel Gibson. It's like there's all these like just random people that I mean, even what's his name? Steven Seagal.
Yes,
was like one of the main bad guys in the first movie.
Well, you know, kind of that same. I think for me, one of the biggest things about Sin City was just the way that the film, you know, was edited and everything else, because it's all black and white outside of those pivotal moments where you had some splashes of yellow or splashes of red to highlight certain instances.
Yeah.
And, you know, the visual aspect was just absolutely awesome. I mean, I don't think anybody could have envisioned or did a rendition of Frank Miller's Sin City better than Rodriguez.
Yeah, it definitely looked like, you know, the graphic novel. I mean, it was almost like the graphic novel came to life because of that, you know, that. And you saw a lot of movies after that doing that semi-digital effect there, where it's, you know, where most of it's, you know, just all, you know, digital or weird.
I think
color
that's as close to live action comic book as you could get.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the idea kind of been toyed around a little bit with, you know, I think Who Framed Roger Rabbit and some of the other ones that had, okay, here's a little bit of live action mixed in with
or,
some animation. But
was it Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow? I mean, pretty much that whole movie was green screen except for the actors themselves.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much it's, there's everything in that movie is digital except for the actors. So it kind of had that same almost cartoony look to it.
You know, and talk a little bit about it, you know, Spy Kids, you know, I mean, that was kind of interesting. I mean, that brought back almost like a James Bond child version of what I can remember Home Alone trying to be, you know, with all the gadgets and gizmos and everything else. So, you know, Spy Kids, I thought was actually pretty cool.
Oh, that reminds me of a tie into Machete, but since we've been kind of talking about Machete and dancing around it, another one of our favorite actors that has pretty much showed up in just about every one of these movies we've mentioned so far is Danny Trejo. I mean, he is the ultimate Hollywood badass.
Yes, I mean, you know, I mean, he's done villains, anti-heroes, you know, everything from Heat to Con Air to Desperado. You know, like you said, you know, all the stuff that Rodriguez has worked on. I mean, you know, you definitely see Danny as a co-collaborator in so many of these other films.
Yeah, I mean, and he, like I said, I don't even know how many credits he's got. He's been in, like, I mean, and the dude is 70. I mean, he's still a badass. He does not look like a 70-year-old
man. Well,
I
mean, you saw him, you know, I mean, he appeared in, you know, Breaking Bad as well as Sons of Anarchy. So, I mean, it's crazy that, you know, you say his age, and in my head, I'm still like, he's doing shit that I'm too out of shape to do, and I'm in my 30s.
Exactly. Like, I could not be doing this at his age, but yeah. I mean, yeah, like I said, he is, of course, the star of Machete, and I mean, he's...
And I guess since he is a second cousin of Robert Rodriguez, I mean, I guess that's why they make such a good collaboration. Yeah. Like, he's family. I don't have to pay him as much. Oh, crap. He's a huge name. That guy's going to be expensive.
What's funny, though, is that, like, you know, he plays as such a badass, and he pretty much, you know, was a badass. Like, you know, before he got into acting, like, back in the 60s, the dude was, like, in and out of prison. Like his, like that signature the lady tattoos and stuff. Those are all real tattoos that he has. I mean, that's not a Hollywood special effect for the characters. He's really that inked up.
Yeah, I mean, well, he did time in juvenile defenders camp. You know, six California prisons between 1959 and 69. You know, and served 5 years in San Quentin. So, dude's no joke. If you know, you're doing time in Quentin and making it out.
Yeah, I mean, and the I mean, he made the Machete movies. I don't think you could have done that with a different actor. Like, I can't see anyone else in that role of Machete than Danny Trejo.
So, I mean, you know, do you think that, you know, this guy's past, you know, you essentially live that. So I guess that's the reason he's able to act that, you know, so well. I don't know. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that about him until we started doing our research for this episode and stuff. So, you know, it's just crazy to see, you know, people battling with, you know, drug addiction and all these other things. And, you know, at some point they decide that, hey, I'm going to get help, get my life together. And you see what a success the person's been.
Apparently he even played a Mexican bartender on Young and the Restless. If Wikipedia can be believed. But yeah, you talked about Sons of Anarchy. We talked about that before. But yeah, him as the, it's funny when you see him as the, he's usually the gangster. When you see him as the lawman, he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm like CIA.
Yeah.
Or like I said, Machete is pretty much the hero. Like he's like like a Mexican, like Federale or something before, you know, somebody tries to kill him. He goes on like straight vengeance spree, but he's like, you know, the good guy.
Absolutely. You know, talking about some of his other movies, you know, Con Air, that was another classic, dude. Yeah. I mean, that's still a movie that if I catch it on TV,
Johnny 23 or whatever,
end up stopping and watching it, you know? I mean, a lesser known Anaconda.
Oh, I forgot about Anaconda.
Yeah. And let's see here, Triple X. That was a badass movie too, with Vin Diesel and you know that crew.
Triple X.
Oh man, if you haven't seen Triple X,
I've seen Triple X. I just don't remember.
Great action flick.
I just don't remember Trejo in it. It's been a while since I've seen the original Triple X. But yeah, he and you know we talked about Spy Kids and stuff. I mean, he's like, you know, the uncle or whatever. I mean,
yeah,
he goes from being like complete badass to like now he's you know when he's not.
And speaking of badass, yeah, the movie Badass.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but now, like, when he's not playing, like, you know, the badass, he's everybody's, like, you know, cool uncle or whatever in movies. So, yeah, the dude has definitely got some serious range. And one weird thing, speaking of Machete, Machete Kills, the second movie, one of the stripper assassins or whatever that's chasing him, like, these girls that are, like, half-dressed, toting MAC-10 machine guns, one of them is the little girl from Spy Kids.
Really?
Yes, I'm like, that is kind of creepy that his, like, you know, the girl who played his little niece is now half butt naked chasing him with a machine gun in another movie.
It just mind boggles me. Like, I'm just like, you know, thinking about it, saying, you go from one extreme to the next extreme, like, yeah. And then, you know, at some point, you know, you meet everybody off the set, like, just, I don't know, it's crazy because, you know, I see the personas that actors try to and actresses try to portray and everything, and then I'm thinking, like, how is this person in real life? And that's the facet that you never really get to see.
Yeah, and of course, you know, he was in, I think the first time I seen him was Desperado as the knife-throwing assassin, and then he's the bartender in Dusk Till Dawn. Like I said, pretty much anyone who was in the first movie is also in the second movie.
Well, I mean, he was also a Mexican bartender in the daytime soap opera, The Young and the Restless. So, I mean,
yeah. He's got experience
he's got a knack.
Bartenders.
So, yeah, it's just awesome.
And he's also done a lot of, like, you know, voiceover work. He's done voices for several video games. I mean, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, Fallout New Vegas, The Fight.
Dude,
Call of Duty Black Ops.
You just Fallout New Vegas. Holy crap. I want to go upstairs and play that now. That's such a great game. Sorry, tangent. Yeah, I also did you already say Black Ops?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the zombie map, Call of the Dead. So yeah, that's just freaking awesome.
Apparently there's a song written about him by a Mexican rock band called Pasatilla Mosh. They have a song called Danny Trejo. I may have to look that up here in a little bit.
I think we just found an outro song. Potentially.
Oh.
All right. Well, any other final thoughts on Trejo?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
All right. Well, do we want to step it up to you know, one of our directors, producers, screenwriters, novelist, I mean, guy that, holy crap, we've probably talked about all of these films at some point or another, Mr. Del Toro.
Yeah. How do you say his first name, Brad?
I'm just going to butcher it, and I've had a pretty heavy beer, so not even going to try. We're just going to say G. Del Toro.
Okay. Guillermo Del Toro.
See, that's why I have you. You're my official pronunciation.
Yeah, I mean, Guillermo del Toro has made pretty much most of our favorite films, at least, you know, lately. I mean, the dude, he's, like you said, writer, director, producer. The guy has been in to damn near everything.
Yeah, and it's awesome to see, you know, his takes on, you know, the facet of, you know, kind of the combination of horror meets, you know, fairy tale and, you know, his writing styles and everything. I mean, we've talked about him, but, you know, Blade, Hellboy, you know, Pacific Rim, Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, just so many freaking awesome movies that I just, you know, and collaborated with Peter Jackson on the Hobbit films. I mean, guys all over the spectrum, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of got his start in, like, you know, cheap horror movies, and you even see that kind of influencing his later work. I mean, one of his, like, first big films was The Devil's Backbone. You know, Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth was probably, like, the first two, you know, big movies that that he's known for.
I didn't see The Devil's Backbone. Have you actually seen that, or?
No, I've heard of it. And then Pan's Labyrinth is just,
dude, the writing style on that. Well, I mean, that was one of the things is, you know, even though, you know, he's talking about monsters and everything else, I mean, he adds such a, you know, a visual and poetic essence behind it. And, you know, it says here that he's had a lifelong fascination with monsters, which he considers symbols of great power. So, I mean, just bringing those thoughts and everything to the big screen is, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's just truly amazing. I mean, you know, I have such envy for these guys that I see, you know, can visualize something in their head and then they can bring it to life. And, you know, unfortunately, I see something in my head and it dies there.
Yeah, that's one thing I really like about his movies is the use. I mean, there's usually a monster in just about all his movies. And just the use of the big practical effects when it comes to monsters and such. That, like I said, Pan's Labyrinth, whether you think it's scary or whatnot, is definitely a straight-up creature flick. I mean, the monsters and the... Especially the creepy dude with the eyeballs in his hands and all that shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was... You know, Pan's Labyrinth was one of those films that I started watching it late one night, fell asleep, and just had to pick it up the next day. But, I mean, it's very dark. You know, and it's just an awesome film. I don't know. I the subtitles were a little bit tough for me to get through. So, you know, it was one of those that I was like, oh, shit, I got to be fully awake and attentive to truly catch what's going on.
And then, like I said, he also did the Hellboy series that we talked about when we were talking about Ron Perlman. And like I said, he considers like the Hellboy series to be, you know, some of his, you know, most personal works. That was like a real, you know, passion project for him.
Yeah, I mean, you see Hellboy and everything else, and you know, you look at him and you think he's a devil, but no, I mean, he's, you know, there to actually side on the, you know, with the humans and everything else, lend them a hand. And you know, I think despite visual appearances, it's the, you know, inner makeup that, you know, visually what looks like a monster in reality probably isn't, you know. So I think it kind of had, you know, one of those don't judge a book by its cover takes to it.
Yes, yeah, so that's something you definitely see with his films is the, you know, the most monstrous person in the movie is usually the most human. I mean, it, like I said, you know, Hellboy in any other movie would be the villain, but, you know, he's probably the most, you know, the real villain is, you know, he looks human, but he's the biggest monster there is. And the guy that looks like the monster is the, you know, the most human and, you know, humane character.
Yeah. I mean, which, you know, we saw that, you know, kind of that same, you know, stance when we saw Age of Ultron. I mean, so, you know, I think it kind of sets the stage, you know, for some of the things. I don't know. In my head, this is all making sense. I hope, you know.
This yeah, and he was supposed to direct the Hobbit films, but then he just kind of had some you know, production issues and decided to you know, back out of it. But he still has a writing credit on it because a lot
of
that stuff. Yeah,
because he did you know have a lot of influence on the script and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was you know the Hobbit films and
then you know Pacific Rim. I mean, that's probably the biggest film he's done so far with the, you know, and I mean,
yeah, and I don't think there's a month that goes by that we're not sitting at the cigar shop that film comes on. We don't sit
that thing
for,
is like
watch
always,
it. Yes.
Like always constantly playing on one movie channel or the other, and it's just, I mean, the epic scale of it too. I mean, because a lot of that stuff was, you know, built practically. I mean, there was literally like a full size, you know, foot of the robot on set, or like I think that big chess piece was there. So there's literally like two or three story tall pieces in the movie. So it's not all digital effects. I mean, there's a lot of practical work in there.
Dude,
as well.
How cool would it be to go to a movie studio and just see like parts of a kaiju just sitting there? Like, what? That's a thing?
Yeah. I mean, and as a fan of the, you know, Godzilla big monster movies of back in the day, this definitely modernized that whole genre of film and made it not look like a dude in a rubber suit. I mean, it's very easy.
Wait, Godzilla's not real? Damn.
But it's very easy in those films to, you know, it look fake. I mean, but his robots and his monsters all really had weight and presence to them. Where they, I mean, you believe that was a, you know, skyscraper sized robot running around Tokyo, bitch slapping people with a, you know, with a boat using as a freaking sword.
Well, and I didn't realize this, that he actually spent 10 years as a special effects and makeup designer and actually formed his own company, Necropia. So I guess having that level of experience and expertise, you know, if you're a makeup artist and somebody's like, whoa, what are you visualizing in your head? Hey, dude, come here.
Yeah, and I would, you know, as the Marvel Universe goes on and they're kind of getting, you know, some directors are phasing out and new directors coming in, I'd like to see what he could do in either the Marvel Universe or even the Star Wars Universe. I mean, maybe not, you know, I mean, especially, you know, Star Wars got a shitload of aliens and stuff, and, you know, he's a special effects guy. I'd like to see what he could do, maybe if not one of the main movies, but maybe some of these, like, you know, spinoff movies. They're talking about doing a Yoda movie. I mean,
dude, no, I hadn't even thought of that, but I could definitely see how that could work. I mean,
the Mos Eisley's cantina scene done by Guillermo del Toro. Yeah. I mean, we would have some jacked up aliens if nothing else.
But I think they would be memorable because we're talking about all the different characters and everything else that he's did, and you know, we talk about Hellboy, we talk about Pacific Rim, Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, chances are, even if you haven't seen all of those films from start to completion, you could say all of those, and, you know, through the publicity and everything else, you could visualize Hellboy. You could visualize, you know, the, you know, creature from Pan's Labyrinth that you talked about with the eye and a hand. Yeah. You know, the big ass, you know, aliens and stuff like that from Pacific Rim. So, you know, it definitely creates a lasting and lingering, you know, presence. And I think that's what makes him so great as a, you know, producer, director.
And he keeps, you know, Cigar Nerd of the Year Ron Perlman busy because he puts him in every movie.
Speaking of Cigar Nerd of the Year, so in Mortal Kombat, we might have to do a segment on Jax because, dude, he's got a pouch with three cigars in it. And one of his fatalities, he actually grabs a person by the mouth and rips their skull open and then, you know, snuffs the ashes of the cigar on the person's tongue.
Hey, no, you don't snuff out cigars. That's just wrong. You're not supposed to do that.
But when he's doing a fatality and he's got two more as a backup, I give the guy a pass.
Yeah. Maybe he's smoking something cheap. What was that pop vinyl figure we saw the other day that had a cigar?
Oh, geez. What was that one?
I need to pick that one up.
Because it wasn't Perlman, was it? No, it was...
Well, we did see the Perlman bobblehead from Sons of Anarchy that was smoking a cigar. But I think it was a pop vinyl, too, that had a cigar. But, I can't remember at this point. There's so many of those damn little things.
That's a dangerous and slippery slope.
I've got to buy, like, all the Deadpools, especially the Deadpool driving the taco truck. That was...
With the chimichanga on the side of it. Yes,
that was one
of
like,
awesome.
I may have to purchase that.
I mean, outside of Del Toro, Banderas and Rodriguez and Trejo, was there anybody else memorable that came to mind? You know, I heard Penelope Cruz mentioned quite a bit for some of her works.
I mean, I've seen a few things with her in it, but I've not really, you know, followed her much, and you know, unless you've got something to bring up on her.
Not really. I was just seeing where we were going with that. Nowhere. All right, cool.
I mean, Selma Hayek, of course, is another, you know, I have to pull another Hispanic actor out of the back of my head. Because I've literally had no days off this week, so I've not done a lot of research for this episode. But, you know, Selma Hayek, I mean, Desperado, back to that again. I mean, that was pretty much the first time we saw her. And, you know, not only was she super hot, that she has, you know, definitely made a long acting career since then and has been in many, many things.
Yeah, let's see here. So, I mean, dude, Dogma, Wild Wild West. I mean, you know, those are two great flicks on their own.
Yes, as the stripper, our muse turned stripper in Dogma.
You know, 30 Rock, Grown Ups, Grown Ups 2.
Yeah, something, the Grown Ups films. I mean, she played Adam Sandler's wife in those. And, I mean, I've not seen the second one, but you know, the first one, you really, it was kind of impressive because, you know, unfortunately, we're getting to that age where we're grown-ups now. So I could see a bunch of my, you know, old high school friends and shit getting together again and trying to, you know, relive our youth. But, you know, with the
interference. It would probably be an utter fail.
I would probably end up being David Spade's character because I'm the one that doesn't have any kids or whatnot. Then all my old buddies have, like, you know, families and everything else. So I would definitely end up being the David Spade of the group.
That's what makes us cigar nerds, my friend. This isn't a task we took on. We were born into this. One of the shows from ABC, Rachel's been watching Ugly Betty. I didn't realize she was in it, but
really,
yeah,
yeah. I've not watched any of that.
So I mean, so you know, as I was saying, you know, as we wind down from producers, directors, and actors and stuff, we'll switch gears a little bit. So, you know, talking about, you know, Spanish themed and everything else, I can't talk about this topic without coming up with a few comedians that come to mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's, for me, I mean, I've been watching a lot of the old George Lopez show recently.
Dude, I mean, that's one beauty that I found about Netflix is I've discovered so many comedians and, you know, skits and, you know, stand-up performances that, unfortunately, I didn't get to experience, you know, firsthand or have access to, you know, the premium cable channels or whatever, so... Yeah, it's almost been a godsend for me to rediscover some of the talents.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the George Lopez show when it was, like, first on, and recently they tend to play it on, like, that's when you know we're getting old is because, like, TV Land and stuff that used to be playing, like, you know, old stuff is now playing stuff that was on during our lifetime.
Yes.
And, like I said, I don't sleep much, so real early in the morning they usually play, like, several episodes of the George Lopez show back-to-back, so... I've been watching a lot of that lately, and it's still just as funny as it was. I remember it from back then.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once again, we talk about, holy shit, dude, I just found a picture of George Lopez with a cigar in his mouth.
I mean, yeah, the dude's a smoker, yes. Too. So I think he even, like, you know, had a few cigars on the show, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, he definitely gets a pass for cigar nerds.
Absolutely. You know, just some of his works and everything else, you know, the whole Nick at Night lineup. Let's see here. Nilsson hit in primetime.
He's got like a newer show on, I think. I cannot remember what it is, though. But he's...
Yeah, didn't he play the mayor or something in Reno 911, too?
Might have been. I mean, his stand-up is always hilarious, too. But yeah, like, that's the main thing I remember from is the George Lopez show, but then he also had like a whatever Lopez Tonight kind of like late night show.
Yeah, that was like on TBS or something, right?
I think so. Yeah, it would either come on before or after Conan, and it was
that was one of the few channels I had access to.
Well, that's been like more recently too, yes. I think.
Yeah, because it looks like it just got canceled like back in 2011 or something like that. So,
and of course, like I said, he's been in a, he was in like, you know, The Spy Next Door with Jackie Chan, which was freaking hilarious. Where, and then I think it was it oh yeah, he was the FBI agent in Balls of Fury, the where it was the ping pong movie.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm like thinking, I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah. That... Where they were going after the big evil guy was Christopher Walken.
Yes. Dude, ping pong's such a big culture in our office too. I'm surprised that movie doesn't get referenced a hell of a lot more.
Okay. The only ping pong I played was beer pong. You know, ping pong is not it's a finesse game. It's not for big dudes, because every time I hit the ball, I knock it like, you know, across the room. It's like it's hard to like keep it on the
same
table.
Same reason I can't play tennis, because I hit more home runs in tennis than I ever have in my baseball.
Exactly. But that's how we used to always like sneak out to go smoke in school, is because we'd play tennis, and then when it's time for a cigarette, someone would just knock the ball over the fence into the woods, and then we'd spend 10 minutes looking for the lost tennis ball.
Should have a dog on site, man. My dogs are not going to let a tennis ball get, you know, 10 feet into the woods.
But then we wouldn't be able to smoke. We're like, yeah, we're going to go. Oh, damn, the dog came back with the ball.
What kind of cigars are you smoking in 10 minutes, my friend?
Well, back then it was like, yeah, Swisher Sweets or
yes.
Marlboros. Which I didn't smoke. I just didn't want to do anything, so I'd go hang out hang out in the woods with the smokers. I wouldn't have to go, you know, run or whatever we were doing.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Another big comedian was the one of Gabriel Iglesias.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, his, like, I'm not fat, I'm fluffy. You know, that always, like, you know, spoke to my heart here. I'm not fat, I'm fluffy. You know, this dude, see? There's proof.
Dude, and his storytelling, the different voices and sound effects that he uses in his act and everything else. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, he picks on himself and...
I mean, he's a comedy genius. I mean, he was on, like, did a whole, like, thing about cakes one night, and, like, now people bring him cakes to all his shows, and he even showed up on Epic Mealtime one time making a, like, fast food cake with with the Epic Mealtime guys. So the guy's been all over, and, I mean, one of his favorite, like, skits he talks about is, like, how to get out of a ticket. He's like, if I'm ever pulled over by the cops, I just, like, haul ass to the nearest donut shop. And when they pull up, I just drive off. So they're like looking at me, looking at the donuts, looking at me, looking at the donuts. By the time they make up their decision, I'm halfway home.
Oh, shit. So did you know the term, oh, I'm not flat, I'm fluffy, was popular among overweight people in the 1940s?
Really?
Yes. So he just thought it was a cool term. So he decided to use that in his act moving forward.
Well, damn, I got to change that. I'm not fat, I'm overinflated.
Damn.
Oh, but yeah, like I said, and I haven't seen him in a while, but the old Carlos Mencia show, I mean, that one was always, I mean, I'm always a big sketch comedy fan, and that one had some of the funniest damn sketches on it.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, once again, I mean, this guy, he uses race, culture, criminal justice, social class, you know, all kinds of stuff that, you know, most people would...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, only a comedian get away with that. You know, if that was a politician or your average Joe, you would be shamed and shunned. And
I mean, the one of the worst ones I remember seeing was his Mexican superhero, Beaner Man. It was so, like, over the top, stereotypical. I mean, the dude's superpowers, he would shoot tequila and hot sauce out of his hand and wore giant cowboy boots. And his archenemy was Dirty Sanchez, played by Mario Lopez from Saved by the Bell.
Oh, shit.
I mean, that sketch was just...
I don't know. Somebody that shoots tequila and hot sauce, so they might be my new best friend. I mean...
True, Dan.
I mean, you know, we're talking about tequila and stuff like that. You know out of the 136 agave plants, only the blue agave plant produces good tequila?
I did. I mean, no one ever goes to Mexico without, like, trying to sample some tequila. But and also, you know, tequila is the name of, like, the region where the, you know, most blue agave comes from. There's actually a town in Mexico called Tequila. And technically, if it's not made in that area, it's not real tequila. Kind of like champagne. If it's not made in the Champagne area of France, it's technically sparkling wine, but I don't think they have people keep up with that as much as as most places do. But I mean, and I've watched some of these like drinking shows where they actually go down there and show you how it's made. And freaking agave plant, it's a big ass plant. I mean, it's like, you know, this big cactus looking, almost like a weird pineapple.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too, is a lot of people think agave is cactus. It's actually lily. You know, so that was another interesting fact. I've apparently in the last 5 minutes become quite the tequila aficionado. So
your Google foo is quite strong.
Hey man, just keeping it gangsta. But you know, most of the time though, one of the things I read is, you know, tequila is typically, you know, not served as a shot traditionally. It is served more as a, you know, sipping drink. And
yeah, it kind of depends on the time. I mean, especially if you get like aged tequila, that's definitely a more of a kind of the equivalent of like a whiskey or something where you'd want to sip on it more. But I think definitely the frat party crowd has definitely made the shooting tequila.
I wouldn't even say that. I mean, dude, how many rap songs did we hear, you know, in the early to mid 2000s? And I think every one of them referenced Patron at least 7 times.
Yeah. Dude, I can't. Tequila makes me want to fight. I mean, I can't do tequila. Like, I can sip whiskey all night and just be like a calm night. Yeah. If I'm drinking tequila, like, yeah, we're going to throw down.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, like I said, it's more commonly sipped slowly, either alone or alternatively with sangrita, which is a mix of tomato juice, orange juice, lime juice, and chili. Prequin, maybe. Pequin. And it's served in with a shot glass alongside it. So, I mean, that almost, to me, almost has like a Bloody Mary take to it if I had to try to Americanize it. Just with the tomato juice and stuff, so...
All right, we've talked about our favorite actors, directors, comedians, and now Mexican liquor. What about Mexican legends?
Are you talking about the Chupacabra?
I mean, we have to mention him as long as we're talking about Mexico. I mean, we have a framed Chupacabra artwork on the wall down here, so...
That we do.
I mean, I don't know why, like, the Chupacabra is something that's always kind of fascinated me as... urban lore, maybe because like Loch Ness is so far away, but you know, I could be, you know, in Chupacabra country in like, you know, a couple hours.
Well, I think the it's funny, the literal old translation is called goat sucker.
Yeah, because supposedly it likes
and
to...
when we talk about this, we're not talking about the goat from Waiting, we are talking, you know.
Yeah, because supposedly it's known for attacking and drinking the blood of livestock, especially goats. Apparently goats are much more tasty, which like I pretty much associate this with like a Mexican legend. You hear it coming out like, you know, the southwest area, Texas and farther south.
Well, I mean the first
sighting was in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Yep. And there's been sightings all the way up to like as far north as Maine. So the Chupacabra gets around. And it also makes a pretty damn good cigar, too.
Apparently it does, because, you know, it also being spotted outside of the Americas and stuff in countries like Russia and the Philippines.
I do have one Chupacabra story. One night my friend hit something and calls me like, dude, I just hit a Chupacabra. I'm like, did you say you hit a Chupacabra? He's like, yeah, it was way too big to be a dog. It had to be a Chupacabra. It's like, okay, man. Were you drinking or not? No, dude, I swear, it was a Chupacabra. That was way too big to be a dog. It was either that or a werewolf. But I was near the chicken plant, so I'm pretty sure it was a Chupacabra.
So, what does a Chupacabra look like?
I've heard it looks like a person with, like, some kind of weird bug-type head. I've seen, like, you know, drawings where it's a kind of a, like a lizard dog-type thing. It kind of varies on the legend in the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a image here that is supposed to be based on the original description, and it looks very reptile-ish, but it has the big slanted bug eyes, like, you know, you would imagine.
Kind of reminds
like
me of those,
was
it the Skleelax or whatever from Land of the Lost?
Yes. but, you know, three toes with pointed claws, and But still, at the same time, as much alien as it looks, it does kind of have a human form to it. So,
and according to this, it was first reported in March of 95. So, I mean, it's yeah, I thought it was like a more of an ancient legend than that. But it's fairly a fairly you know modern zoological
legend.
Well,
we keep talking about doing a ghost hunter episode or something like that, or you know just paranormal in general.
we're going to go on a chupacabra hunt.
Yes. So, yeah, cigar nerds, we will let you know if the chupacabra truly exists. We'll try to have a cigar with one.
We'll end up on one of those weird Discovery Channel shows where they hunt strange monsters or whatnot.
Good times.
I think that about wraps us up. Definitely go out and, like I said, if you're not exposed yourself to the Latino, Mexican, Hispanic culture, definitely go eat. I mean, great food, great drinks. I mean, it's if you've ever been on a trip down that way, I mean, there's some beautiful country out there. I mean, it's definitely get to know your neighbors to the south, and because they've had especially an influence on this country as well as vice versa. So I mean, any final thoughts on Cinco de Mayo?
No, I think we've summed it up quite well. I mean, like you said, get out there, experience it, firsthand. I don't think you could ask for a better old, culture to, partake in.
And it's close. You can,
Yeah, absolutely.
you can drive there in several hours. All right, well, with that, we'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Searching for a beast of yore with a long neck and a tail. Everywhere we look, we lose on this long and dusty trail. We're westward ho, cause the ranchers know something isn't right. Their goats are being snatched away in the darkness of the night. Chupacabra, chupacabra,
what just jumped the wire?
Chupacabra, chupacabra,
I'm starting to perspire.
Chupacabra, chupacabra,
I'm not usually a crier, but isn't that
the goat that fire?
Posses and gangs have tried to hunt and flush it from its lair, but not till now have a gang of kids pursued it from the air. Cowboys tried to trap and trick it with just about everything, but no one's ever tried to lure it with a pulley on a string. Pulley on a string.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to Beer 30. What are we drinking today, Brad?
We are drinking Clown Shoes, the Luchador en Fuego Mexican style chocolate stout.
Yay, you actually pronounced that right.
Yay! Big round of applause. Or golf claps all around.
Yeah. Yeah, this is their third anniversary beer, and they've taken their chocolate sombrero and jacked it up a few notches. This is like a double imperial stout, so it's a lot stronger than the previous edition. I mean, it comes in at 11% alcohol. So yeah, this one's definitely got a kick to it. You drink a couple of these, you're going to be, I feel like you're in the ring wrestling the luchador.
Yes, this is actually using ancho chilies and chipotle peppers. So you still get, the chocolate stout taste, but you also get a little bit of that spicy heat from the peppers there. And it's kind of funny. The barbecue I fed you earlier tonight was also using ancho and chipotle peppers. So nice. I thought that that was kind of interesting tie-in.
Yeah, not only are you getting that chocolate and spicy flavors out of this, it's also aged in, bourbon barrels, but it was like, Wild Heaven and Wild Turkey or something like that?
It is Wild Turkey and Heaven Hills.
Yeah, so it's also got that nice bourbon-y flavor to it.
Yeah, this thing is so complex, man. It's all over the spectrum for me. In the official description, they also talk about, brewed with some vanilla and some other spices added, and
spicy.
Yeah, it's damn good. And it drinks very differently than the other chipotle beer that we reviewed, and even some of the other pepper brewed beers. We won't go there.
Yes, there's a reason why that review has not been played yet.
Keyword yet.
Yeah, because I'm still like, you know, scarred from that that one beer we tried.
Yeah, I do like this sentence here though. May it leap into your palate majestically like a luchador who flies into the ring from atop the highest rope. And I, dude, that's awesome marketing. But at the same time, I don't think that there was any sentence that speaks truer about this beer.
Yeah, it's definitely like, you know, if you're expecting the usual stout flavors, it's definitely got a surprise for you, like a Mexican wrestler with a mask on.
But it's, you know, at the same time though, it's subtle and it just works. There's not just one overpowering flavor that I get with this. I mean, it is every sip. This beer right now is probably 47, 48 degrees. I'll be curious to see what it does once it comes up to the 55 degree and what other flavors, you know, come out of it as it warms up. But, you know, as of right now, it is so perfectly well balanced that.
Yeah, because you're getting that spicy flavor, but it's definitely not overpowering. I mean, the chocolate and the bourbon just really melds nicely with it.
You know, I see a lot of the clown shoes, different styles of beers and stuff whenever we go to the liquor stores. After tasting this beer, I'm definitely going to be picking up more clown shoe stuff just to give it a try.
Yeah, a lot of the clown shoe stuff, I mean, I just drink because they have a tendency to have a really cool names for their beers. But I've not really been disappointed with one yet that I've picked up.
Absolutely. Joe, what are you thinking as far as your official Untappd review?
This is at least a 4.5 for me.
I'm going to say 4.5 here, only because the other half, I don't know what it's going to come to once the beer actually warms up a little bit on me. So that's something that we'll have to check back in on another beer segment just to give you our final thoughts on that. But overall, if you happen to see this beer sitting on your shelf, I would highly, highly recommend it.
I believe it's just been released. When I picked this up the other day, they said they just had put it out. So if it's not in your stores yet, keep checking, because like I said, it should be coming to a liquor store near you very soon.
Perfect. Anything else, Joe? Or
pour me another one.
All right, you got it, buddy. We got rounds coming up. You folks, stay tuned.
Yes, science. And welcome back to science. Are you ready to get edumacated?
Absolutely, good sir. What you got for me?
Science. Sweet. Weren't you listening to like the intro?
Crap. I must have missed that part. Maybe I didn't edit it in or something.
Well, starting off with, since you know, we will be talking about our Age of Ultron review later on in the show, I found an article about actually how hard the Hulkbuster armor, you know, punches. Yeah, if you haven't seen the movie, you know, you see like, and even in the trailers.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I was going to say, you don't necessarily even see the movie. Just watch the official trailer, yeah, and you'll see what we're referring to.
And you see Tony's, like, badass Hulkbuster armor that's designed specifically to fight the Hulk. And a guy who wrote a book called Geek Physics, I think we also referred to this book when we were talking about the, like, how much power the Death Star laser has.
That's when we learned our numerical value of nonillions. See there? I'm retaining my science education.
Wow. You may like pass sixth grade yet, but
hey, man, it only takes three times the charm.
Yeah. So yeah, he's back with a new article where he actually went in and did the math and figured out all the stuff about the Hulkbuster armor. If we go back to the comic books, when the Hulkbuster armor is introduced in the comic books, Tony says that it, you know, can produce whatever it has hydroelectric muscular or some big fancy scientific word that no one can pronounce. But he said it will produce 175 tons of force, which is pretty sure that's like the maximum. It's not how much he's like actually hitting, but that's like it. Cause you know, Tony always builds shit like way bigger than it has to be. So that's probably the top end of the spectrum. And you know, they figured out that for him to actually hit at that, you know, that amount of force, would it would like be, you know, a Mach 2 punch. So he said literally his hand would have to be going faster than you can see almost to deliver that kind of, you know, impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of science that goes into figuring out the mass and everything else of the Hulk exactly, you know, and well, scale, you know.
Like I said, that's how they referred to it in the comic book. But this guy took, like, the video of him getting hit and how far he flew and how long it took him to fly that far. And, yeah, because, you know, that was filmed in, like, a real street somewhere, or at least, you know, set in a real street somewhere. So they could actually measure the distance and say, all right, the Hulk, who weighs around 2,000 pounds, flew however far distance it was. And they come up with the number of 20,000 newtons or 4,500 pounds of force.
Dude,
so
that's pretty
a
intense.
Hell of a punch.
Yes. Yeah. I
mean, I might be able to do 43, but that's about it.
I got 41 and a quarter, so I'm out of the match. I don't know. You know, after, I guess, last night's upset and what people thought were going to be a historic boxing match that turned out to not quite be up to their expectations. Maybe that was the cause. Maybe somebody figured out how to throw a 4,300-pound...
Yeah, I read in that article, too, that basically the real-world equivalent of that, you know, amount of pressure is, like, the thrust of the space shuttle when you see that thing lifting off is, like, generating... You know, that much, yeah, similar force.
Well, I think with that, I definitely need to get my ass back in the gym.
Or you need to just become a billionaire and, yeah, build some Hulkbuster armor. We got to figure out how to, that whole arc reactor thing works first.
I don't know. It's just important that that little piece of shrapnel stays away from the heart, so. That spells doom.
No, Doom's in a different movie.
Oh, yeah. Our video game. I mean, depending on...
Yeah, true.
I mean, you got Dr. Doom, you got Doom the video games. I mean, I'm sure there's been, you know, freaking Doomsday that the History Channel and everything's done. We could go on forever about Doom.
To continue on with our superhero theme there, scientists have edited the first human genes. So we're kind of on our way to, you know, some Captain America shit.
Yeah, and this is coming from a group of Chinese scientists who, you know, published the results of their first genetic editing of a human embryo. And
appeared in the Journal of Protein and Cell because it was rejected by several, like, Nature and Science Journal because of, you know, ethical concerns. Because even though we can modify genes at this point, though there's still a big question of, should we?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm a little bit torn on this aspect. Like, yeah, I love all the benefits of science and everything, but, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, we saw Tony Stark almost destroy the world trying to save the world. So, I mean, you know.
Before we get into the ethical implications of it, the actual science behind it is, you know, genetic diseases are real hard to treat. It's not something you can really, you know, take medicine for. It's something that's going to cause usually like a lifelong problem that it's going to take, you know, constant treatment. And with, if this technique is ever perfected, and it's still in the way, way early stages, they would be able to, you know, detect anomalies like birth defects and stuff early enough on that they could go in there and correct it, you know, while it's still in the embryo stage. But then again, you know, if they can do that, then there's the potential of being able to, you know, modify stuff like, oh, I want, you know, I want my kid to be Captain America or or whatnot.
Well, I mean, you know, do we potentially risk the point of, you know, oh, I want my child to come out with blue eyes, brown hair, this kind of build, this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at some point does having children become like ordering off of a fast food menu? Like, that's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, and you know, if it gets to the point where people are just so, everyone ends up the same because, you know, they're like, all right, you know, we're only going to produce this type of person, you know. We get like our, you know, weird Hitler master race stuff going on.
Or, you know, we'll not even take it to the German extreme, but I mean, holy shit, here's Star Wars, Attack of the Clones all over again.
True, yeah.
So, you know, we're getting a freaking clone army going on. So it's all bad. I don't know. I mean, Yeah, does the good outweigh the potentially unknown bad, per se? I guess is how I'd look at that equation.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I can see it, you know, a lot of good, you know, applications, but then again, it's...
Well, that's the thing, is, you know,
for,
I mean,
for bad shit is just...
Unfortunately, an old saying that I learned was, you know, people with good intentions are a pathway to hell, you know, because it's all...
The path to hell is paved with good intentions, yeah, I think is the... How it goes.
Is the proper...
And yeah, even though it's like, yeah, there's always somebody who's going to abuse something.
That's why I don't believe in actual true equality, because there's always somebody that's going to want an upper hand in one facet or another.
There's always someone who's going to fuck it up for the rest of us.
And that, my friends, is why we can't have nice things.
But then again, yeah, like I said, you know, if you could do that stuff later in life, yeah, instead of, you know, don't mess with the kids, but I'll take some superpowers. I'm like... It's all good. Like, you know, where's the force gene? Can I, you know, turn myself into a
so,
Jedi?
So, let's say you had that gene. What would you do with it? Kind of put you on the spot here, but...
I'd probably go to Vegas, because if I can do some Jedi mind tricking at the poker table, it's on like Donkey Kong.
A full house you do not have.
These are the aces you were looking for.
That's pretty good. I mean, so no world peace, no, you know, trying to actually be a superhero. It's all, what can I do to better the Joe?
I mean, if you had Deadpool's healing factor, I mean, or Wolverine's healing factor, you make a lot of money as a stunt person.
Very true, very true. So,
you throw me off that bill and I don't need an airbag. It's all good.
No, we got this. Yeah. You might want to hire a construction crew, because you're going to have to repave that concrete.
I might leave a dent.
Jeez. What else you got for us, buddy?
Well, any fans of God damn, I can't even say it today.
You know what's bad is I played you the Sesame Street video.
That's got
you all
up.
Screwed up. So, you know, instead of...
Sesame Street.
So instead of Kermit, you're over there, Kremit. Kremit.
Anyway, scientists in Costa Rica have discovered a new type of frog that looks just like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, I mean, you know, same level of lime green color with the big bug eyes and everything. It's pretty well fitting. Although, you know, I got to say that it's kind of striking that we haven't discovered this species, you know. I mean, as a kid, I think I drew this a million times.
Yeah. And it's called the Hyalinobatrachum diana, if I'm pronouncing that even a quarter of the way right.
Yeah, that's a big H word, but...
Yeah, like, when I first saw that picture, I'm like, that's Photoshop. There's no way that thing actually looks like that. But no, that was a legit picture, because those eyes just look... weird.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kermit, you know, he had the little slits in the pupils, but this guy's more, I don't know, his pupils are almost human-shaped, which is kind of creepy when you look at it in detail, but apparently this frog is found in hidden in the rainforest off of Costa Rica, so...
Down there with the poison dart frogs or whatever. Or the, you know what it kind of reminds me of? You ever see the Hypnotoad from Futurama?
I don't know if I've seen that or not. Is that on some of the newer stuff, or is that...
I don't know. I've seen it on there several times, but it looks like...
I'm a little bit out of touch when it comes to Futurama.
It's like a regular frog, but then its eyes do all this weird stuff, and it, like, hypnotizes you when you look at it. And it kind of has those, like, same eyes.
Like I said, I just can't get over the fact of how human-looking they are. And then, you know, on the outside of the pupil, it almost looks like eyelashes. So it's like an eye within an eye, and... Dude, it's tripping me out. I'm going to quit staring at this thing now.
It won't be long before there's a horror movie based on the the freaking Kermit frog.
But, you know, I just found another picture. So the underbelly of this thing, it's almost transparent.
Whoa, weird.
Yeah, I'll have to send you the photos that I'm looking at here, because that's kind of creepy, dude. Like, huh, I wonder what the underside of a frog looks like. Oh, there it is.
Oh, well, sooner or later, just about all my science articles go back to aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens, but...
It's probably aliens. Yeah.
Well, NASA has just announced that it's getting serious about the search for extraterrestrial life. They've started this thing they're calling the Nexus
Initiative, right?
Yes. Sounds like a weird Avengers thing.
You know what it sounds like? A cell phone.
It's a stands for Nexus for Exoplanet System Sciences. And they're putting together like a team of experts from across all like scientific fields to kind of come up with, all right, this is the methodology we need to do to actually find life on other planets. And they're not talking, you know, little green men, but, you know, microbial, you know, early, you know, signs of life, you know, like pre, you know, stuff that maybe like we had back in the day before, you know, when we were just, you know, several.
Well, I mean, any form of bacteria or protozoa or, you know, something of the sort to say that, hey, it may not be what we think is, you know, alien life as we see it in, you know, so much of Hollywood science fiction, but what a true account of alien life may be. So I don't know, you know.
And they're saying that they think we're going to have a strong indication of life beyond Earth within the next decade. So they're definitely getting, you know, serious about, you know, finding aliens and whatnot. And as long as we don't find, like, you know, the aliens from like Independence Day or someone who wants to come and eat us, I'm all right with alien bugs that can be, you know, stepped on if need be. But if you know, the
dude, you just got to arm yourself with a cricket. That's all you need. Cricket.
Noisy cricket.
We're all going to go back and rewatch Men in Black and be like, all right, here's what they did. So you might want to go ahead and start stocking up on your tabloids now.
Yeah, just go ahead and, like, you know, make sure you, because, I don't know, we talked about that weird cigar-shaped spaceship someone sighted, you know, and just make sure you get your humidor stocked so when the aliens show up, you'd be like, here you go, homie. Find Dominican tobacco. Yes. And they'd be like, go in peace, homie.
I like your approach. Because I think that's where most governments go, is they take too much of a hostile, you know, nature. So if we offer them, or who knows, maybe where they come from, that's a piece that, oh, he's threatening me with the fire stick, and we end up getting vaporized.
E.T. phone home and take some Maduro with you.
Dude, everybody's making a big fuss about Cuban cigars and when they're going to become available. I want to be the first to smoke an alien cigar.
Somebody shows up like Groot, and he can, like, grow, like, freaking tobacco leaves.
That would be awesome.
I've been watching way too much X-Files lately, so, like I said, I'm my alien theorems are getting... I'm almost as crazy as the guy on the History Channel by now. All right, well, I think that about wraps us up for science.
Well, oh, do you want to go into the...
Well, no, there's one, like, short one that I wanted to talk about that I saw that was just weird. Kind of reminds me of some Goonies stuff. Some people were cleaning out their attic, and they found this... found a hand with coins and what appears to be a treasure map. And of course it's in Florida, because, you know, weird shit always happens in Florida.
Yeah, so apparently this was found in Tampa, and that is very... I'm just kind of reading over the article for the first time now, and...
Yeah, apparently it has the word Gaspar written on this, and it's kind of all mounted in almost like a... Yeah, display case or shadow box or something, but there's a severed hand with a ring around it. And
I'm reading here. So the backstory is they're thinking this may be connected to the legend of a late 18th or early 19th century Florida pirate, Jose Gaspar, who was also known as Gasparilla. And there's even an annual festival in his honor that takes place. So that is very interesting, my friend. This is something we're going to have to touch back on and see if anything comes to fruition as the treasure hunt.
Yeah, no real science news, but I was like, that's pretty freaking cool. All right, well, we'll be right back with...
Whatever comes news after this segment.
Yeah.
Which is my segment. So we're going to talk about news, so get ready for more stuff of interest. Stay tuned, folks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to the Nerd News segment. We've got a hefty dose of reviews and feedback and all kinds of nerdy stuff that the Cigar Nerds have been up to these past couple of weeks. So the first thing I want to talk about is a little bit about video games. Finally got an opportunity to
get... Pong?
We're going to take it a little bit more modern than that.
Okay. Pac-Man?
just slightly more, I don't know. Dude, let's just go next gen. So I got my hands on a PS4.
What?
Yep. Luckily, I was able to move some furniture for a friend, and she just happened to have one laying around. She's like, oh, by the way, here, take this. Go play it. Sweet. Good times. So
yeah, I need one of those friends.
Immediately, I went out and bought Mortal Kombat X and had an opportunity to beat story mode and also play with some of the other characters and stuff. And I gotta say, man, this rendition of Mortal Kombat, seeing it on next gen and 1080p, is a definite game changer.
Yeah, I've not had an opportunity to play it yet. I'm still PS3-ing it, but just what videos I've watched of it on YouTube and stuff, it just looks amazing. I mean, it looks just bloody as hell.
it is definitely, you know, gory to the true Mortal Kombat aspect. There are, you know, several things that are a bit different. You know, one of the big noticeable things from Mortal Kombat 9 now is the fighting structure. You know, Mortal Kombat 9, you had the multiple fighting styles, but you could actually switch those up mid-fight. This time, as you select your character, you choose the fighting style, and that is the style you are locked into for the duration of the two or three rounds. So that, you know, I could see this even veteran Mortal Kombat players having an opportunity here to have to relearn some things, because some of the characters do not feel the same at all. I was playing around with Scorpion, and you know, I think everybody knows some of his special abilities, and
get over here.
Yeah, some of the stuff makes him very sluggish and does not feel like Scorpion at all. Yeah, so but also, you know, the fact that Jason Voorhees, Predator, and those characters get released sometime, it's either on the 4th or 5th. Those are some of the characters I'd like to play around with.
Yeah, I definitely want to see those when they come out.
So, you know, true Mortal Kombat fans, I think Mortal Kombat 10, you're going to, you know, truly enjoy the updated graphics and the facelift. Although, I will say, playing through story mode, it definitely made me realize my age.
Why is that?
Well, you know, I'm not going to give away too many spoilers here, but so many of the original characters that we're going to remember from the arcade versions and everything have, you know, grown up, had families of their own and everything, so...
Well, like I said, the original came out 23 years ago, so, yeah, pretty much they are, like, you know, old enough to have... They're like, we're getting too old for the shit rigs.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, we'll definitely get some playtime tonight for you, Joe. You know,
I gotta say that having them get old and introduce a next generation of combatants is a whole lot better than friggin' just rebooting it all from the beginning.
Exactly. At least they're trying to come out with something original instead of just rebooting the same stuff over and over again. So, you know, I mean, I can remember back in the days when they started introducing Skeletor and some of the other cyborgs, and people were like, oh my god, blah, 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 and, you
Skeletor?
Know, or Sector, I'm sorry.
Skeletor is the He-Man bad guy.
I know that. Skeletor, Sector, it's all the same thing.
But hey, they keep putting these, like, you know, old, like, special characters in there.
Damn it, I'm trademarking that.
If they could do
it. Copyright.
He's like, punched your mic.
That's okay.
But yeah, they put a Skeletor as a downloadable character. That would be pretty awesome.
I mean, we saw it with some of the Honda ads and stuff. So, I mean, you know. Weirder things have happened.
So what else is going on in the world?
Next in video games, we got the trailer released for Call of Duty 3.
Or Black Ops 3.
Black Ops 3, I'm sorry.
Because there's about a half a billion yes. Call of Duties of different types and whatever. Yeah, this one looks... I mean, the last one was kind of the near future, and this one is like way, 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 way in the future from the looks of it.
Yeah, I mean, this almost has some Halo-esque qualities to it, you know, just looking at the trailer. One thing that I wish that I thought the Battlefield franchise did so well that I wish Call of Duty would introduce is, man, give me some interactive backgrounds and some vehicles and stuff I can drive instead of it making me play it linear.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to see some more free-range capabilities out of the
franchise.
Yeah,
with the Black Ops, it's definitely more of a straight, you know, shooter game. It's not like, you know, like with the Battlefield, where it's almost like an open warfare thing where you can jump from, like, different soldiers or whatever. This is definitely a linear story, or at least, you know, on story mode, which hell, half the time people don't even play the story mode anymore. They just get it and play the online.
Yeah, I don't know. See, I'm more the fact that, one, I don't have very many friends. Two, with my work schedule and everything. I just don't have the hundreds of hours dedicated to leveling up my character.
And I get tired of getting killed by, like, 9-year-olds in China.
I'm okay with that to a certain extent. Although I'm like, man, you'll kiss your mama with that mouth?
Yes. But yeah, it kind of looks like a continuation of what we saw in, was it the last, was it Advanced Warfighter or whatever?
Yeah.
Or was it Advanced Warfare?
I think Call of Duty was Advanced Warfare. I think Advanced Warfighter was Tom Clancy.
Yeah, so yeah, it's pretty much, like I said, in the last, whatever, Advanced Warfare, we saw the exosuits and all this stuff, and now it's like full-on like robotic replacement parts. From the clips, it looks like, you know, dude has like, you know, a arm that has multiple weapons and stuff that would pop out of it. So pretty much at this point, the soldier is becoming a weapon himself. It's going to make some interesting gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of rag on the series, but
Course we get a zombies mini game too. So that's one thing you're pretty much guaranteed when you're playing Black Ops is to get a freaking zombie game in there as well.
Yeah, and dude. I'm sorry, the one with George A. Romero as the final boss. I don't think he can top that. But I will be picking up this game and everything, so you know, yeah. I'm not going to hate on it. I'm going to say that it's probably going to play very similar to all the other Call of Duties, just with some enhancements. So there'll probably be a little bit of a learning curve, but you know, I definitely see the playability factor, you know, here.
I definitely got to upgrade and get me a next-gen system so I can participate in some of these because, yeah, when it first came out, there wasn't that many games that I'm like, I absolutely have to have, but now we're starting to get those, like, you know, definitely system-worthy games.
The new Batman? Yes. Just because I'm such a big fan of Arkham Origins and then, what was it, Arkham City.
Arkham Asylum. Arkham Origins, and now Arkham Knight. Because you get to drive the Batmobile.
And we actually have a model put together, finally. Woohoo! Switching gears a little bit. We've talked about Daredevil, our thoughts and everything. Well, Netflix has announced that they will be doing a Season 2, as if we didn't already know that was going to be in the mix after the success of the first season.
Yeah, because they announced this like four separate stories that were kind of going to come together at the end, and you know, that was pretty much what it, you know, they weren't going to do a season two because they were just going to be like, you know, the next chapter with a different character and stuff. But now they're like, yeah, we're, you know, at least Daredevil is getting a whole nother season. So that's, and then they're also talking about possibly a Punisher series too.
Yes, I heard rumors of the Punisher series, and I mean Punisher probably being one of my all-time favorite characters, I have really, really high hopes for that, and
Daredevil was just bloody as hell since it doesn't have to pass TV standards, since it's a Netflix original. I mean, that's the perfect format for for Punisher.
Yes. I definitely would not like to see that in a made-for-TV series. I mean, just because so many of the novels and, you know, the graphic novels and things, I mean, there's so much there that, I'm sorry, you just can't pass on, you know, family TV. So I really like this platform. I hope it opens the doors for future projects. And as those are released, we'll keep you posted. There is no official launch date yet for season two of Daredevil, just that it will be available sometime in 2016.
Yeah. So is it time to talk about the important stuff of the week?
We haven't got there yet.
We're running out of time, dude. We need to like, go. I'm chomping at the bit, man. What's next on your list?
I was just going to touch, since we're talking about, you know, TV series and stuff, I just had to throw it up there for Arrow. The trailer for the last final three episodes featuring Gorilla Grodd or Gorilla Grodd.
Flash.
For Flash. My apologies. That's in the mix. And with no further ado, the Cigar Nerds went out on an adventure earlier this week. And Joe, would you care to tell the fine folks at home what we managed to do with the 5 hours of our life?
Yeah, we went to the Marvel double feature where they played Original Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron in a row, and we sat through like about 6 hours.
And not only that, but we got to experience it in true IMAX 3D, which was amazing.
All right, but before we get into it, I just want to say from here on out, spoiler alert, because we are probably going to spoil the shit out of this. So if you don't want to hear what happens, freaking just go ahead and turn off the podcast, follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. But yeah, you're warned. If you hear from this point on, because we're so excited, we'll probably say something that's... You know, not that you
And real
you
quick, before we jump into the movie, dude, I just want to say, did you catch the immense nerdgasm that happened when the Star Wars trailer came on?
Yes. I mean, people literally started clapping and cheering.
I think there were before, tears.
And, but that was even before, even sorry, as soon as the Lucasfilm logo popped up, I mean, everyone's like, yeah! And I got to say, watching that trailer in IMAX 3D is so much better than watching it on my little laptop screen. I mean, it was... It's beautiful. It's just so amazing.
That may be up there for, you know, one of our, you know, geek out moments. So, I mean, that might be the one of our generation.
That and the weird mixed messages we got, because the theater we went to see it in had a bar. And they showed a commercial for their bar. And then we got like 4 anti-drinking ads like right after that. And then I think another commercial for the bar like later on. I was like, you're sending mixed signals, people. It was just kind of weird. I was
a little bit torn.
Every other commercial was a don't drink commercial.
Yes. So with no further ado, you have been warned. Joe, take it away.
It's fucking amazing.
And there you have it, folks. There's your spoiler.
It's just, I mean, there's so, like up to this point, Guardians has probably been my favorite Marvel movie so far. And this one was just, there was just so much stuff in it. I mean, it was a good solid, 2.5 hours, something like that. And it was, it felt like everybody kind of got a storyline in it.
And that was actually through some of my research and diving through review sites and everything else on the film. There was actually a lot of hate for that because so many people felt that they just tried to jam pack as many Marvel characters into one film as they possibly could. And you know, I necessarily didn't get that feeling, but
yeah,
I mean, there's
me.
Been a lot of hate on this film.
And I none that I've heard. I mean, everything, you know, critics, they all, you know, no one ever listens to them. They're all a bunch of idiots. But yeah, those that can't make movies, you know, complain about them on the internet. But to me, it also cleared up a lot of questions I've had from, like, you know, some of the other movies. Because, like, you know, especially Winter Soldier, you're like, all right, well, all the shit's going on, where's freaking Tony and the rest of the Avengers? I mean, once the Avengers happens, there's already an Avengers in the world. So when you see these solo films, you're like, why the hell hasn't, you know, other people showed up? And this movie kind of answers some of those questions. I'm like, oh, you know, Tony and them were working on this other thing. Or, you know, why hasn't Hawkeye and Black Widow showed up on S.H.I.E.L.D. since they were S.H.I.E.L.D. agents? Why hasn't Coulson brought them, you know, back into the... rebuilt, but they've been, you know, we find out that, you know, Hawkeye actually has like a personal life and a family and stuff that's been like all secret, so he's been probably chilling at the house, or they've all been doing like Avenger shit, so, you know, that's why they're not, you know, back doing S.H.I.E.L.D. missions, because they're pretty much since the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the last movie, the Avengers have kind of been taking on all those missions that normally would have been handled by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, touching on some of the other characters, I mean, we did get to see Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver. You know, there were so many good characters there. And then, you know, of course, Stan the Man Lee with his couple of cameo appearances. Just fucking awesome.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Him trying to do shots
at
Thor.
And, you know, that was the other thing, too. You know, him taking the shots at Thor. And, I mean, as soon as Stan made his appearance, dude, the theater erupted.
Yeah,
and I
always.
Mean, there's just something about, you know, sitting in a theater with complete strangers, and then, you know, there's certain pivotal moments happen like that, and everybody, you know, just bust out into laughter or cheers or whatever. So it really changes the dynamic versus, you know, just sitting on your couch at home alone.
That, so there's certain scenes in that movie, too, that are just straight off the page of a comic book. I mean, like that one, and I think it's been in those trailers, like when the opening scene where they're attacking the Hydra base, and there's what one part where they kind of all jump into battle at the same time.
Yeah, and you
and
know,
it
people,
slows down.
And it was so funny
that,
too.
That's a straight splash page from a comic book. I mean,
yes. And it's funny too, because you're looking at that and you're thinking that's when the action's already kicked off. We're probably 3/4 of the way through the movie when that takes place. Hell no, that's
I
one
mean,
of the very first scenes.
Yeah, I mean, this movie really like just grabs you from right in the opening. And, you know, the Vision as well. I mean, I literally, like, there's one part where the after the vision revealed, I was like, holy shit. I mean, it's like, yeah. I literally like yelled out in the theater because I was so like surprised by it. I was like, oh, that's just...
But, you know, that was one of the great things about this movie is, like you said, you know, some of those lingering questions and things, this movie kind of brought it full circle.
Yeah.
And then it also set the precedent for the next movie, which...
Which, yeah, we, you know, there's going to be a whole nother Avengers team at this point, which we've expected that since we're, you know, Civil War is the next thing in line. But I'm looking forward to seeing more of, because I've always been a fan of War Machine, so... Getting War Machine back into, you know, the Avengers and stuff, since since supposedly there's not going to be any more straight Iron Man movies, I definitely want to see see Falcon and War Machine showing up more often, you know, as things progress.
So let me ask you this: do you think we continue? I mean, we know we've got another Captain America already in the works, and Marvel's released their schedule, but do you think we reach a point in the next few years where instead of doing single character movies, it's more team based and team style like we've seen with the Avengers?
I think from here on out, it's even the solo films are going to have a lot of the team up, because we already know Civil War pretty much is going to be Avengers 2.5, because, you know, Iron Man's going to be in it. We, you know, we already know that, and a lot of the other Avengers are going to be showing up in it. So, I mean, with the exception of, I would think probably the next Thor movie is probably going to be just Thor, because he's on a whole different, you know, planet, reality, whatever Asgard is. But yeah, the...
But I mean, you even saw this with Age of Ultron too, where, you know, Thor ends up, you know, taking Loki and they kind of disappear. And so, you know, you may actually see him setting, you know, the next movie out. So I can see how they're going to tie together, you know, for his character.
Yeah.
I did read an article today. I don't know how credible it was, but there was at least a couple of guys in the Marvel higher-ups looking to try to acquire X-Men back.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, so, at this point, they've like completely, you know, that's what we're getting an Inhumans movie is, because they've kind of edited out mutants in the Marvel Universe. You know, they're, everyone's either Inhumans or the result of some kind of Hydra experiment. And also... We didn't, you know, we know the Black Panther movie's coming up, and we didn't get to see the Panther yet, but there's definitely a, you know, they talked about Wakanda, they talked about, you know,
Vibranium. There was definitely some foreshadowing going on.
Yeah, everybody has seen Andy Serkis as whatever, Ulysses Claw, I think his name is. You know, they introduced that character, which he is a big bad guy in the Black Panther series, so we know he's probably going to be showing up again at some point.
Yes, so, I mean... Me personally, dude, like you said, that movie kind of grabs you, and it, you know, it held my attention throughout. There wasn't a dull moment for me. But
and also, just friggin' James Spader as Ultron is just—he is so friggin' creepy.
Yeah, I don't think they could have cast a better character.
No, I mean,
or, you know,
there's
actor
like,
for that one.
Dude's got like mood swings and shit. Yeah.
Yes, and I mean.
And the Hulkbuster armor fight. I mean, we already talked a little bit about it during science, but it's everything I wanted it to be. It's from that first glimpse of it in the trailers, I'm like, this is going to be freaking awesome. It did not disappoint.
Yeah, and that was, you know, kind of the big thing for me was, you know, the trailer set so many high expectations for me personally, and the movie never disappointed. There wasn't a scene in the trailer that, you know, rolled around in the movie and I was like, man, that just wasn't near as awesome as I expected. You know, kind of switching gears a little bit. We've talked about Jurassic World in the past. This latest trailer that came out for that, it's almost like, all right, you guys are trying to do too much now. Now the humans have teamed up with the dinosaurs and,
come on,
know,
man, SWAT
like,
raptors are the shit.
I mean, maybe it'll work, but, dude... I don't know. Like, I honestly, a lot of people were like, oh my God, this is, you know, that was a highlight for them and made them like, man, this is going to be a really badass movie. For me, I'm like, it almost felt like it took something away. So I don't know. I'm a little bit torn on that film.
And, what was the other thing that, I'm really want to see what this week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like too. Cause you know,
Yeah, that was the thing.
The
is,
aftermath of this has to tie back into Agent Shield somehow.
Yeah, and if go ahead and give you guys a little bit of a heads up too. If you're not up to date on Agents of Shield, go ahead, catch yourself up before you go see Age of Ultron. Just that way you can see how
the previous
it all...
episode definitely ties directly into the beginning of Age of Ultron.
And I think that's another thing that's cool is how the TV series has kind of modified itself to tie into the movies and vice versa. So, like you said, that's just another awesome aspect that are bringing things full circle. So I guess in between, the year release dates, maybe different TV series start picking up and starting piecing together certain aspects of those puzzles.
Yeah, because instead of having to wait 2 years for another movie or whatever, at least the TV series gives us something to tide us over up until the next big installment, which I think next up is Ant-Man, which I don't remember the release date of that, but it's coming out within another couple months, I think. But yes. I think that'll about wrap it up. Any final thoughts or shout-outs or whatnots?
The only other big thing that's been going on is this Jared Leto as the Joker. We saw that one picture get posted, and I'm not quite sure if this dude's a juggalo or what, but that's
he looks like a douchebag. It's douchebag Joker.
But, everybody was like, holy crap, this guy looks, either douchey or it's like he looks methed out or he looks crazy. And then, the other facet is... is this just a big internet troll?
Yeah, he could be just fucking with us.
Yes, yeah. Because there's been,
this movie doesn't come out for another year, so this could be just evil shenanigans at this point.
Yeah, because there's been some talks on Twitter with people that are close within the production of Batman and stuff. Side dropping all kinds of stuff. So we'll keep you posted as we learn more, but. The only other thing I can think about is a cigar. Do you want to do that final thoughts, or do you want to go ahead and...
Go ahead. What do you think of this Mexican cigar?
As we got down to the final third here, the spicy, the boldness, it definitely turned up a notch for me, really made me appreciate it, since I'm such a big fan of the Super Ligeros and things of that nature that typically have a big, bolder, more intense flavor. This is a bargain cigar, in my opinion, and a very phenomenal cigar at the price point. So this is one that was so simplistic that I probably would have shied away from it. But now that I've smoked it, this is probably one I'm going to go back to more and more.
Yeah, I'm a fan of pretty much all the Rocky cigars. I think my first regular cigar was the Rocky Patel Edge. And yeah, this is definitely a damn good smoke. Speaking of smokes, we've got an event coming up. We are going to the Southern Cigar Festival at Verizon Theater, or Verizon Amphitheater. Was it June 6th?
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah, so, it's going to be a huge event. They're going to have, bands playing. You get, 30 cigars with your ticket, plus, some other swag. There's going to be, 35 different cigar company reps there, so you can talk to people about, making the cigars and whatnot, and so it's going to be a real interesting event. So I recommend that y'all go check that out if tickets are still available.
And it's so awesome because it's outdoors, but it's going to be covered, so rain or shine, it's going to be perfect.
Yep. And also, since this will be coming out on the 5th, Monday was May the 4th, so happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
And with that... check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network. You can find that at ESOPodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CigarNerdPod. Go to our Facebook page. Like it, share it, tell people to come watch us. Also, we're available on iTunes and Stitcher. Please go there, rate the show, review the show. That's how we get it out to hear more people. And with that, vaya con Dios. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.